try as you might, unfortunately, there will always be at least some people who are not willing or able to change their mind on abortion within the span of a single conversation. So how do you optimize the outcomes of those conversations when a complete or full conversion might not be in the picture? That's the focus today. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show. Thank you all for sticking along for the ride. For those of you who have been longtime listeners, I know that it's been a bit of a journey through April here with sporadic episodes and all that kind of thing. There's a million things on the go. Apologies as well for those of you who have been listening to past episodes, and the microphone seems super wonky. I am having some difficulty with our recording platform when it's saying that I'm using one microphone, but unfortunately it's using a different microphone, trying to get that figured out. So I appreciate y'all for sticking along for the ride. For those of you who might be new, joy to have you along. It is an absolute honor to be a part of your listening library. We have recently rolled over 125,000 downloads on Spotify and Apple Podcast. We have around another 50 to 100,000 on YouTube as well, which is more than I could have ever asked for or hoped for. And that's all thanks to you guys for listening to the podcast and checking out episodes that you're interested in and all that kind of thing. We are also getting dangerously close to 700 subscribers on YouTube. If you listen on a podcatcher and are not a big YouTube person, I get that. If you don't need to look at my face, that's even cooler. It is a face made for radio. And so this is geared towards ye who listen through your earbuds and not watch on your computer or phone screen. But if you wouldn't mind doing me a huge favor and heading over to the Pro-Life Guys podcast YouTube channel and clicking subscribe, that will help potential guests. As I've mentioned on the show a number of times before, many guests that are trying to gauge whether or not it's worth their time to come on the Pro-Life Guys podcast, it's really difficult to see how big of a following a podcast has. And YouTube is one of the cheating ways that people can look at it. And they'll go to the YouTube channel and be like, oh, there's only 650 people that subscribe to the show. It must not be that good. Therefore, I'm not going to bother going on Cam's podcast. If you guys could help me change that, the more people we have subscribed to the show, the more likely, especially the higher profile guests are to come onto the Pro-Life Guys podcast and show. And so if you wouldn't mind doing that, if you haven't already, that'd be great. If you would do an extra solid for me, you don't even have to listen to it on YouTube. I get that the YouTube app, unless you have YouTube Premium, is a pain in the posterior. However, if you could play an episode in the background, you can have it on mute. The views also help the algorithms, and people that are YouTube people will be more likely to stumble upon Pro-Life Guys podcast as well. But that's enough shameless promotion from me. The question that lies before us today, I hope that the roadmap will help you have as many productive and positive and meaningful conversations as humanly possible. I hope that many, many people change their hearts and their minds by walking through the roadmap for having good conversations. I mean, starting with justifications for why people support abortion and addressing them, whether they bring them up proactively themselves or whether you need to provide them and get them thinking about the problems in our world that we are trying to solve when we think about the abortion crisis. And then from justifications going into talking about the humanity of preborn children, central to the conversation about abortion, if necessary, and once you have gotten verbal confirmation of the humanity of the preborn, you may need to go into the personhood of preborn children. Lord willing, they become pro-life. You give them a big hug and a big kiss and get them involved. And next week, they're out door knocking with you or holding a sign on the street corner, something like that, or they're donating gobs of money to your organization. That is the goal. And I am stubborn and I am optimistic, and I don't think that there's anybody that is not worth having a long, meaningful conversation with. There might be some people that start off belligerent. There might be some people that are rude or apathetic or whatever. I think everybody warrants a good conversation and everything on our part. I don't think there's anybody that we should be writing off. However, as we've talked about in recent weeks, and I'll drop it in the show notes below, the conversation about how to end conversations about abortion, particularly if you need to end, if your team is wrapping up, if you got to get on to your next activism event or something like that, how do you end conversations? At times, we're ending conversations because we're not making any more forward progress. We are at the point where we're stalling and the person is being a stick in the mud and not progressing any further. They're not accepting the principles, and whether they're building their abortion worldview into their identity, whether it's other factors that are causing them to be reluctant to change, what do you do? Is there a way that you can achieve more than just what I had suggested a few weeks ago in having a thank you for the conversation, here's where we're stuck, here's what I would suggest or encourage you to consider reflecting upon, researching, whatever, to get unstuck, and here's why it matters? Are there ways that you can change the conversation to get your foot in the door or get them thinking about things in a slightly different way and helping them become part of the solution? And I've been thinking about this topic for maybe 2-3 weeks now, and I rewatched a YouTube video a couple times because it makes me think of the American sitcom The Office. I don't know how many of you have seen The Office. I think there are some hilarious episodes. I think that there are some wildly inappropriate episodes. If you're not an Office person, I respect that. If you are an Office person, cool beans. I've watched a number of the episodes of The Office. There's one spoiler alert in some ways, I suppose. I don't think it's a big spoiler. One of the characters in The Office named Oscar, who's in the finance department, the accounting department, he is widely viewed as arguably the smartest person in the office. And he is the actually man. He is the guy that overhears people misrepresenting information or facts. And he just inserts himself and he says, actually, here's the information that you need to know. Or actually, you're wrong about this. Here's the correct answer. Or actually, Oscar has become the actually guy. And Michael Scott, the boss of the show, arguably the main character of the show, I don't think very many people would take a bullet for him arguing that he is the smartest man in the office. I think that he exhibits some wonderful management attributes and whatnot. He tries really hard. I have lots of thoughts on The Office, as you can tell. But there's an episode in which Michael comes in and he shares some information about China and about the economic development and how far superior in some ways the economy of China is to America. And Oscar has one of his actually moments. Actually, Michael, you're wrong. The statistic that you just quoted was a projection and not the current numbers. And Michael says, no, 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 I am right. And it's this like Western standoff of like, is Michael really going to go toe-to-toe with the smartest guy in the office? And it's proven that Michael was right. And Oscar doesn't like the feeling of not being correct, and Michael kind of rubs it in his face, and everyone else in the office who's a little bit tired of Oscar's shtick rubs it in his face that Michael is now the smartest man in the office. And so Oscar takes Michael out for coffee to talk about China and try to convince everybody, including Michael, that he is still the smartest person in the office. And he's getting there, and it looks like he has won the conversation. It looks like he has demonstrated that he is way smarter than Michael. Until at the very last moment, Michael snatches victory from the jaws of defeat and changes the conversation. Changes the conversation to no longer being about statistics and numbers and information that he gets Oscar actually knows more about. He changes the conversation to why the freedom of America is superior to the totalitarianism of China, and smugly walks away in triumph as Oscar is desperate. No, that's not what we're talking about. You don't come out victorious in this situation. That's a really long, preambly kind of way of using an analogy to show that sometimes we can have a productive conversation by changing the conversation in some ways. Obviously, our entire goal is to convey and garner acceptance of the worldview and the fact that abortion is a human rights violation, that it directly and intentionally ends the life of an innocent living member of the human species, and that all living humans are valuable, have human rights, are made in God's image and likeness, all that kind of thing. And so that is our ultimate goal. What happens if you cannot attain your ultimate goal? Can you achieve a side quest in some ways? Can you get them to agree to something and become a part of the solution without them even agreeing wholeheartedly with you? And I want to propose two things that I have seen a number of my colleagues do that I very much agree with as a way to get your foot in the door. The first is to pivot from talking about abortion in general to sex selective abortion specifically. If you're talking to somebody who thinks that abortion is always okay, in every single circumstance, the mother has complete authority and control over her body or is justified in having an abortion in any situation, in all situations. I have seen a number of people, myself included at times, have a lot of success by pushing the point of sex selective abortions. And why would you do that? You would do that not because those are the only abortions that you think are wrong. You're not going to try to change your worldview and say that somehow other abortions are okay and it's only sex-selective abortions that are wrong. However, it puts a very interesting conflict and dilemma into the heart of the person that you're talking to. Oh, I believe in women's rights. I'm curious. I agree with you. Women's rights are incredibly important. Rather than trotting out the toddler, I might even trot out a female fetus and say, imagine a mother wanted to have an abortion for the simple and sole reason that her baby was a girl. Maybe she doesn't want to have girls. Maybe she already has in her mind too many girls. Should she be allowed to have an abortion specifically because she wants to kill a baby girl and she doesn't want to have a baby girl in her family? And it's interesting seeing all of this conflict come to a head in their mind as they desperately try to reconcile their women's rights perspective with the notion that it happens that baby girls are killed prior to birth because mothers don't want baby girls. I'm not suggesting that you need to be well-versed in the Canadian Medical Association report from a decade ago or so, however long ago it was, suggesting that there are some ethnic communities in Canada that preferentially want boys in their family, blah, blah, blah. This isn't a cultural or race-related issue. I have spoken to people who have told me that they want one boy and one girl. They had a girl for their first baby. They find out that their second little baby, while they are still pregnant, is a girl. And they say, we want one boy and one girl. Therefore, we're going to abort this second girl and try again to have a boy. I have spoken to people who have said that they have had abortion or that they would want to have an abortion if, you know what, if my first child is a girl, I only want girls because I don't want to have to buy boys' clothing. I already have all this girls' clothing. I want to have girls all the way through so that I don't have to spend more money on boys' clothing or boys' toys. I have literally heard that in conversation a number of times. And so this isn't something purely fabricated. This is not something that is purely cultural or social or race-related or anything like that. There are people of all backgrounds who have an affinity for one reason or another towards boys or girls or one boy and one girl or two boys and two girls or whatever kind of thing. There are people who have all kinds of different worldviews on this. And so to press somebody on sex selective abortions can at times generate the breakthrough that you need because it forces them to reconcile their value of often little girls in particular with the notion that if I value little girls, and clearly we know if this is a little girl before they're born, well, no, I don't think that sex-selective abortions are okay. Boom. There's my foot in the door. Now I get to leverage that. Having gone through the roadmap several times already, now I'm able to lever that information into maybe being able to, okay, well, if it's wrong to kill a baby girl just because it's a baby girl, what if it's a baby boy, and you're killing them just because they're a baby boy and you don't want to have a baby boy. Okay, what further ground can I build now that you have conceded this point? Same thing goes with late-term abortions. Sometimes people ask us, why do we, at CCBR and other pro-life organizations that use abortion victim imagery, why do we use late-term abortions? We acknowledge, and we're very willing to acknowledge, that the majority of abortions happen prior to the third trimester here in Canada. They're legal through all 9 months of pregnancy. Canadian Institute for Health Information, which is the government funded and whatever health tracking platform, acknowledges that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of late-term abortions performed every single year. Often, at least for me, I think that there's tremendous value in exposing late-term abortions to demonstrate a starting point of, well, I don't support that abortion. The number of people, we were at a high school recently where initially people were supportive of abortion all the way through pregnancy, that if a mother wanted to have abortion, she always could. And then I started using and referencing the sign that I was holding a 24-week abortion victim more and more and more, and forcing them to reconcile that belief with a child that literally could have survived outside of the womb. And through that, a number of those students that I was talking to not only came to reject late-term abortions, which a step in the right direction, certainly not all of what I was hoping for, but a couple of the students went so far as to acknowledge that, okay, I'm against that late-term abortion, and I cannot answer your questions as to why killing a child before they're born later in development is worse than killing the same human being a few weeks or a few months earlier. It created a crisis moment in their brains when it came to, I know that that is wrong. I cannot convince myself that that is okay. And because I know that is wrong, it is forcing me to second guess or backtrack on my other areas of worldview. And so those are two initial projections that I can make, talking about sex selective abortions or talking about late-term abortions, that can get my foot in the door when it comes to having some kind of protection, some kind of appreciation or value or understanding of abortion, at least at times, being a human rights violation. Certainly, as I get my foot in the door, I am going to try to wedge that door open as wide as I can to ensure the protection and value of all human beings from the moment of fertilization. However, that is a good start. And if I can get that good start, as much as there are slippery slopes that go in the bad direction, as much as we often, certainly within right wing or conservative or Christian or whatever kind of movement you want to call us, we look at a lot of slippery slopes as being a really bad thing. And often, obviously, they are. Sometimes they can be a really good thing if we can use them properly, if we can initiate the landslide and say, okay, you have confirmed with me that you believe that that late term, that 24-week abortion, that 20-week abortion victim, that was inappropriate. Okay, now you are going to reconcile with yourself or be forced to try to reconcile how that can be wrong, but earlier term abortions are right. And I know there are many people who end up at the pro-life worldview because of that slippery slope. And so, there's that. The last thing that I want to mention as we start to wind down, one thing that I am doing more and more, because not only am I looking for ideological change, I'm often obviously looking for behavioral change. Not only behavioral change when it comes to the abortions that they themselves are going to have, but also the abortions that their friends, their family members, members with within their sphere of influence might have. And as I get towards the end of more and more conversations, I find myself asking people, could we agree that people who don't want to have abortions, people who wish that they didn't have to have an abortion, should never have an abortion? Could we agree that there are people who might feel like it is their only option, who desperately do not want to have an abortion, but do not see an alternative? And that for those people, at the very least, nobody should have an abortion who does not want to have an abortion. It's amazing how many people are willing to agree with that. That, yeah, I don't think that people who don't want to have abortions should have abortions. I think that if you don't want to have an abortion, but you don't see an alternative, then we should be working towards an alternative. Okay, cool. Let's now, you and I, let's put on the shelf for a moment those people who do want to have abortions. This is not early. This is not before the roadmap. You got to get through the roadmap twice, three times, four times minimum before you're going this direction. But after all of that, and as you're saying, okay, I'm stalling, can I get this person to change behaviorally towards being productively part of the solution? And if I can get them to agree, yeah, I agree that there are people who do not want to have abortions, that feel as though it's their only option, and those people should not be forced to have abortions. If I'm actually quote unquote pro-choice, if this mother does not have an alternative choice to abortion, then that's a problem. Okay, how do we solve the problems that these mothers are faced with so that they don't have to have abortions? And now I'm initiating a conversation about whether it's formal support and formal solutions along the lines of donating towards a pregnancy care center, donating towards government agencies, or lobbying government agencies, or lobbying not government, but formal agencies. I've talked to a lot of people about reviewing their maternity and paternity leave policies and protocols within their employment situation, and pushing for greater support of mothers and greater enabling of maternity leave, paternity leave, all that kind of stuff. And then I also spend a lot of time talking with people at this point of being a social force for good in informal capacities. If a friend, a family member, if somebody within your sphere of influence is experiencing a challenging pregnancy, and particularly, obviously, if they don't want to have the abortion, how can you help them not have the abortion? If that entails babysitting for their other children on a monthly basis so that the mother can go to her ultrasound appointments, if that means dropping by a meal once a week or once a month, if that means a little bit of financial support or camaraderie or going for coffee with them just so they don't feel quite so alone, things like that, what small things or what large things can you do to alleviate the pressure and burden of pregnancy so that those in your life do not feel as though they have to have an abortion? And I have had some really, really productive conversations. I've spoken with dozens of people who have told me that they will now financially partner with the local pregnancy support center, or they will put money or time towards helping out and lobbying to get better support for pregnant mothers and mothers of newborns and fathers of newborns and all that kind of thing. I have literally spoken to people who said, you know what? I want my neighbors to know that I'm here to help, that if somebody in my neighborhood has an abortion, even though they don't want to because they don't know anybody who can help them, then I'm part of the problem. I've spoken to people who have conceded these areas, and I think that is a huge win, and a win that we can and should be pushing towards, because at times I will lob the grenade into the end of the conversation. I'm so glad that we agree on all of these steps that we should be taking for people who don't want to have abortions. I'm curious, have you ever met somebody who did want to have an abortion? Have you ever met somebody who thought of an abortion as something that they really wanted to do and was somehow a rite of passage, and they looked forward to becoming pregnant one day so that they could have an abortion because they wanted to have an abortion? Nope. Nope. Nobody has ever met somebody like that. And if you have, then obviously there are some very deep issues at play there. I'm not saying that doesn't happen ever. However, the vast majority of people are going to look at you with a blank stare and realize the little judo move that you have done. You have gotten them to agree that nobody who doesn't want to have an abortion should have an abortion. If you don't want to make that choice, you should not be forced to make that choice. There should be societal engagement on a formal and informal level to prevent people from killing their children who don't want to kill their children. And then with that, and talking through how they can be a part of the solution for the sake of those mothers who don't want to have abortions and feel as though it's their only option, then the judo move comes in when you ask them if anybody they know, or if they've ever encountered somebody who did want to have an abortion. There are some people who might say they were thankful that they did have an abortion. There are some people who say that an abortion would be an easier or better option than what is available. But you've already crossed that bridge. You've already talked about how there are not enough easier or manageable or appropriate options for pregnant mothers and fathers navigating challenges. We've already dealt with that. We have done the judo move to show that they are actually now committed to basically trying to prevent all abortions from happening, even if in their ivory tower of their mind's eye, whatever you want to call it, they think that abortion should somehow be legal and accessible for anybody who does want to have an abortion. If they are willing to be a part of the solution so that a ton of people, or even a very small number of people, don't have abortions because they no longer see it as their only option, then praise God for that. That is a huge victory. It's not a complete victory. That is not the entire victory that we are aiming towards. But I think that that is a wonderful victory that we can be very, very joyful about and moving in the right direction. And again, plants a very important seed in their mind as to what they can and should be doing, that we all are guilty of being in the armchair of society far too often and not being in the trenches of society as often enough. How do we personally become a part of the solution? How do we personally make small changes? Again, I don't want people to feel like they have to be Atlas holding the world on their shoulders, but rather, what tiny things can you do to help those around you not feel like abortion is their only choice and not end up choosing abortion because they know that there are people willing to journey with them, people willing to support them in material and non-material ways? How do you snatch victory from the jaws of defeat? How do you change the goalposts to ensure that you are getting little victories every time? Sure, we all hope and pray and strive for major victories. We all hope and pray for the hugs and kisses and signups that come at the end of a changed heart and a changed mind. However, if I can't get that, I'm going to get something. I am going to get something out of every conversation that I possibly can, and something is better than nothing. Change my mind. All right. Thank you a ton for tuning in. Please let me know if you have any questions, if you have feedback or ideas or guests or anything else. I'm looking forward to not only having a few other cool guests coming on the show, but I'm hoping that this summer I can do a whole bunch of Humans of the Pro-Life Movement episodes with our lovely and wonderful, courageous and quirky CCBR interns. Our interns, particularly here in Calgary, because they're easy and I can corner them and put a microphone in front of them and interview them. I'm not going to do this against their will, don't worry. I will be inviting many of them, and I hope that many of them will be willing to join me. And so hopefully you'll get to meet our interns in a whole new way. And as I kind of mentioned earlier, and as you will see in the coming days, a full video, inviting you to sign up for the C.S. Lewis Narnia series book club that I am starting. More info on that coming shortly. Thanks a ton. May God bless you abundantly wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.